Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up today, myself, Evan Damerl on Cavs Celtics, where Colin Sexton dropped a new career high in points and continues to just be a very, for no reason at all, crazy part of the discourse. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Come on!
Evan, what's going on, buddy? Cavs Celtics 112-106 Boston win. The Cavs obviously down a bunch of guys, Boston down a bunch of guys, but a pretty competitive game. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the more kind of slowed down games we've seen the Cavs play in recent time. This show will talk about the guy who wears number two for the Cavs, Colin Sexton, in some detail. We'll do the whole second segment on him because he's worth talking about. Yeah,
right. Where's number two, second segment? So
I 100% planned that, Evan. Never, I did not plan anything. When you think about this game, what did you just make of it? It was one of these games that it's just like it was just everything from like KPJ, who we'll touch on his potential injury later on, and you know the whole thing with him not having his jersey on with me, so he couldn't start. And then like Dele plays 35 minutes and like, you know, they just were playing this really thin rotation and all this stuff. Like, what did you make of it?
It was just like a weird game overall. I'm very happy Colin Sexton was able to have a career high in back-to-back games. And maybe you and I were kind of touching on this a little bit, that you have to give a lot of credit to the coaching in this situation, especially, I think it was Martin Rickman who just kind of offhand tweeted at somebody saying that if you put a young guard in a pick-and-roll offense and Sexton is obviously a second-year point guard, the game slows down a lot for him, and I think we're starting to see a lot of that. But overall, yeah, it was a weird game. Cleveland rolled into this one with eight players, but I jokingly said after Kevin Porter went down that it was really six because, I mean, let's just be frank. I mean, Matthew Dellavedova had some nice passes at times at the bench unit, but was largely ineffective on offense, and it broke my heart to watch him get blocked by Tatum in the closing moments of the game, because that's just like, it's just a constant reminder of how big a bummer Dele's been this season, just in terms of his shot, just completely abandoning him. But yeah, no, just a kind of funky game overall. Like Love, Nance, Sexton obviously had a good night. Dean Wade made his like meaningful debut for the Cavs. Kevin Porter got hurt, which is a bummer. And then Jetty Osmond just turned it on in the fourth quarter. So it's just kind of all over the place for the Cavs. And then if you look at Boston, they only had two starters in double digits, with Marcus Smart scoring 18 points, and then Jason Tatum obviously was the best player on the floor tonight, who had 32, 9, and 6. And Semi Ojeleye, who is just had a great night for Boston as well. Like, that was weird. And then Enes Kanter was effective in 14 minutes with 10 and 11. So, like, it just felt like a weird game overall. And I think you and I both said, I think when we were recording, that's when Boston was getting lambasted by injuries against Brooklyn, so we didn't really see that one coming. Like, you and I both agreed that this was going to be a blowout going into this game. And I guess credit where credit's due to the Cavs. They hung tough and didn't let the dire circumstances of being so depleted because of injuries. I mean, Fox Sports did show a shot of, like, everybody wearing their suits, and Andre Drummond looked absolutely ridiculous. Just want to throw that out there too. But
why is he wearing sunglasses in the arena?
You know what? It's just modern fashion, and I don't.
Look, that's stupid. That's just everything else about his fit. Good sunglasses, bad.
Yeah, no, I think
in that moment, that sigh was, why did I agree to host a podcast with this guy?
No, I agree. I just like thinking like where, how I bounce off on that, but just. Other than just saying I agree, like I do on most things you say. It's evident that Cleveland was gassed against Utah on Monday at one point, just because of the injuries kind of ravaging this roster at the same time. And That wasn't really the case tonight. I mean, granted, Boston also is dealing with a lot of injury bugaboos as well, but hey, you know what? You got to take some type of moral victory, and it was a lot of good individual performances. Cleveland just wasn't able to put it all together to try and get claw out a win against a one-time vaunted rival in the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I think there's a world where the Cavs, I think, win this game. There's a world definitely where I think they lose by more than they did, because I thought Tatum kind of got whatever he wanted in the first half. And I think there's a world where like he is just ends up being like even more aggressive and just kind of dominates the game. He had 32, and it still felt like he left some points like on the board a little bit there. I could be being like wrong about that, but that just feels like I think there was more for him that he certainly, you know, I think could have ultimately pulled out in that one just in terms of kind of dominating in a certain way. You look at the Cavs, I think you just look at the way they shot, you know, their numbers overall in the night. Like, I actually, like, if you look at their advanced numbers, like, they're actually pretty good. You know, the 3-point shooting, like, a little below kind of league average, not great. Kind of struggled in the short mid, which they didn't take as many shots there, which is good, but didn't really make a lot of them either. Really, it took a lot of shots at the rim, a kind of a higher number than normal for them. Didn't make quite as many as you would kind of hope, and if you're doing that, but that's okay. But you just look at some of the guys' nights. So Delly's 0 of 8, Jetty's 3 of 14, had 3 points or something like that going into the fourth quarter. You know, Zizic was 2 of 5. I thought left some point, kind of consistently leave some points on there. I think, you know, Sexton overall, I think, had a very good game. I think there's a couple moments where, like, there's that late turnover he had that was costly. It was just, like, the little stuff that I think ultimately cost them. Kevin, I think, missed some stuff inside. They kind of struggled to establish him at first. You know, Larry missed 3 free throws, which is kind of not, you know, not what you want. There's all this little stuff that ultimately kind of ends up costing them. You know, they didn't commit, like, a ton of turnovers turnover-wise. You know, a pretty good turnover percentage for them, just 13.7%. It's lower than their season average. Boston's just a little bit better in that regard. Boston also had an advantage on the free throw mark, taking 26 free throws against the Cavs 20. They made 21. The Cavs made 15. So that's a 6-point. That's the game. Like, that's the difference right there. It's just at the free throw line. So it's just a little stuff. I do think there's another world where the Cavs win this game. You know, I wonder if, like, you have... If you like, particularly if you just like improve on the Delly minutes in this game, if you get Delly just kind of being 5%, I mean, at 4 assists, like, I don't want to say he didn't provide anything. He moves the ball well, he throws good lobs. But if you have someone out there that's doing that and shooting, I think the Cavs can win this game. Again, like, I don't, I think if they had been at full strength, I think if all that stuff ends up being true, like, I would say, you know, that there's a little more reason to kill them after losing a game like this. But I think if you look at, how it played out, how, you know, this certainly just sort of worked itself out in the end. I think it's just the little stuff that loses you a game like this. That's probably the most frustrating part. If you're Jimmy Bickerstaff, that's what I'm more frustrated about than just losing. It's the little stuff that ultimately cost you.
Yeah, and that's actually something JB touched on Saturday when Cleveland played Indiana. Like, again, I'm circling back to a conversation we had yesterday, but JB heaped a lot of genuine and high praise on Nate McMillan, the head coach of the Pacers. And one of the best things he said was the way McMillan has the Pacers operating, the way he has them working under his tutelage, is like, he doesn't let the Pacers beat themselves. And I think that's what JB is generally trying to do with the Cavs. And like you said, just like small mental mistakes or missed freebies at the free throw line, like, those are just the ways you're going to beat yourself. And like you said, the Cavs left 6 points at the charity stripe in this game. And if they were able to, like you said, that's the game. Like, this would be an overtime right now. We would be recording this. Maybe we just start recording this right now. But eventually the Cavs will get there. And I have full faith. I was skeptical of JB Bickerstaff just because a lot of the discourse surrounding him when the move was first announced, but he gradually won me over by some of the things he said and done. And I think it's, again, pathetic that my baseline requirement for a Cavs coach is just to have some semblance of competence and just be able to just keep things smooth and just normal. And JB's done that so far. So I'm pretty satisfied. When the Cavs actually start like fighting for like a playoff spot and actually like trying to do something meaningful, maybe I'll complain about his tactics and methodology. But for now, like, keep on keeping on, JP. Just eventually this team will figure it out, and small mistakes like that aren't going to hamstring them, hopefully.
As we wrap up here, just because we're not going to touch on him much otherwise, what did you, any kind of just quick thoughts on Kevin's night?
Porter or Love?
Love. We'll talk about KPG at the end there. Okay. I keep forgetting there's two Kevins, which is really bad of me because I host a podcast.
No, you're fine, but I just wanted to be clear. I don't know, Kevin Love was, I thought he was fine. Just, he looked really good. He was bombing a couple three-pointers, which is good. And I think when you have a locked-in, and this is just the obvious statement of the night here, when you have a locked-in Kevin Love who's engaged on the offense, and I mean, at this point, we all know he's not good defensively, so you kind of have to just give up on beating that dead horse at this point. But it maybe makes it easier for teams to look at games like this, like saying teams that are interested in trading for him, mind you, say like, okay, well, if we get a locked in Kevin Love like this, we maybe won't get obviously 26, 14 and 5. You'll get a reduced scoring role if he's playing second or third fiddle in a championship caliber team or a playoff caliber team. But no, moments like these are like tape you put on and say like, well, if you want to trade for Kevin Love, maybe Cleveland doesn't have to give up a future first round pick or some type of young talent in order move his contract. I don't know. That's just me maybe having some wishful thinking, but nights like this where Kevin's kind of locked in and engaged are definitely make the overall experience a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I thought his effort level was just really good. And I think that it's just so noticeable when that happens, when Kevin's, the effort level from Kevin's just there a little bit more. And I think it, at a game like this, you see it a little bit. Okay, quick break. We'll be back with more Locked On Kings. Okay, Evan, we are back here on Locked On Cavs. Let's just talk about Colin Sexton. We have about 10 minutes here on this segment, 8 to 10 minutes. Here's his full stat line again, a career-high 41 points. 41 points, 7 of 30 shooting, 3 of 9 from 3, 4 of 4 from the line, 3 rebounds, all of which were on the defensive end, 6 assists, 1 steal, 4 turnovers, 5 fouls. I would guess, without those numbers being available yet, when I was just tracking at home, he's somewhere in the 10 to 12 range of potential assists. So I think like the stuff he said to Chris Fedor recently about making the right plays and like the assist numbers coming, I actually like kind of, this is a game where like I buy into that. Again, I think there's little stuff in his night where it's like, okay, the turnover late was tough and everything, but like, what he's doing right now, I do think is quite impressive. I do think Colin dropping 41, beating another career, having these games where it's like the fourth and five or whatever, where he's dropped 30 or more. He's getting a little more assists. And I think one of the things that I do give JB Bickerstaff credit for in this game is they specifically kind of came out, and you pointed this out before we started recording. I think this was a really good point, so I'm just going to steal it. They run really good half court sets, run a lot of pick and roll with Colin, run a lot of just stuff to kind of let him be himself. There's a ceiling on that. You know, don't get me wrong, I don't think that's like winning you a ton of games, obviously. But I think if you look at where they come out for the night, so according to Cleaning the Glass's numbers, if you look at their overall offense, they're at about 111.6 offensive rating for the year. That is above there for the year. For the year, they are at 107.3 coming into the night. They're at about 111 over the last couple weeks. If you just look at their half court numbers, this is usually a team that really struggles to operate functionally in the half court. And they put up an offensive rating in the half court in this game that was better than Boston's, and at 96.6. That's like almost in the 60th percentile. Like, really kudos to the Cavs for playing that way for you know, I think kind of surviving that way. They did a good job on the offensive glass. That's like one of the areas where they were able to at least get some second chances with Love and Larry both having 5. But Colin, you know, I think he was kind of this is like one of the best examples of, I think, what for him being like the focal point of a team can kind of look like and kind of what you can get out of it. And there's certainly things he'll learn from this and improvements he can make as he continues to grow. But I think what he's doing right now is just impressive. Even if there are little things where you're like, okay, like this is the next step. This is like the next evolution for him. If he's going to improve on this, there's clearly just kind of very impressive stuff there.
Yeah, I agree. And bear with me as I pull. we were talking about this, like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to quantify exactly what Colin Sexton's ceiling truly is, because maybe it's just after the All-Star break, he just goes through some crazy transformative period, because last year he became a legitimately efficient three-point shooter, and then now, like, and that's something people, like, really knocked him for, is taking long twos and not adapting his three-point shooting. But, like, offensively, like, you've touched on this with Fear the Sword, and you've, like, we, you and I have kind of discussed this in private, and we've discussed it on here, like, he's legitimately becoming a, just his aggressiveness is the next step in his offensive game, and I'm, like, looking at this, like, before today's game against Boston, Colin is averaging 13.5 drives per game, and he's scoring on 47.1% of that them, and that puts him in the stratosphere scoring-wise as De'Aaron Fox, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Malcolm Brogdon. And, like, granted, Colin isn't the same player as them. He isn't as established a playmaker as especially Brogdon and Dinwiddie. And, I mean, Fox is a player that you comp Sexton to. It's kind of a lazy comparison, but, like, it's just kind of like you said, like you touched on initially, like it's maybe running a heavier, a good half court sets and a heavier pick and roll offense allow Colin to truly operate. But like, this is, I think, is just him figuring out like the next evolution in his game. And he was making a lot of smart reads tonight too. And like,
truly, I think one of the games that was just one of the most impressive kind of passing games that he's had. I mean, like,
yeah,
there were two instances in the second half where like it was one Jetty and then one Larry, and maybe like, mm-hmm. And then Jetty hit the third one, but three positions in a row, he makes the right pass, doesn't force a shot up in the rim, doesn't force up a floater, like was patient, found the right shot, and like found the guy with the best shot on the floor. And like, he, like, that's what you want. Like, that's what, that is just the thing we have been asking for him and looking to see from him since last year. And when he's doing that, even if like he's not passing guys open or whatever, like if he's doing that, that is market improvement. And that is probably even to me more important than him scoring 41 points.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I know people like to get their bees in a bonnet, and I tweeted this as like a joke. Shout out to my buddy Sai, who is my Photoshop wizard here. But I'm like, hey, can you Photoshop? I sent him the Civil War poster, and I said, can you Photoshop Colin Sexton onto Cap? Can you put Kevin Porter on Iron Man? And can you change Captain America to Colin Sexton? Because like, that's the discourse right now, is like people get bent out of shape on like what we expect from Sexton. At this point, like, maybe it's just a end of the season jump, but and like it's going to be like a Dion Waiters kind of thing where it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things when Colin kind of comes back down to earth. But at the same time, we have tangible data and evidence that he is able to make leaps in such weird times. And like, it's usually it was post All-Star break last year, it's post All-Star break this year. And it's just like, I'm here for the ride, man. And if Colin is able to prove me wrong and silence like my major criticisms of him, which is he gets bad tunnel vision and will ignore his teammates, and then there's times where he is straight up bad on defense. Like, if he keeps proving me wrong, I'm more than okay with admitting I was wrong and then like maybe relinquishing my stance that maybe he isn't a six man or whatever. Like, it's all semantics at this point, but I just think it's so crazy that Colin Sexton has become such a polarizing player over the last few days amongst Cavs fans.
Like, and what are we doing? Yeah. It's so stupid.
He's 21 years old. Darius Garland's 20. Because that's the thing. Like, if you're Team Sexton, you crucify Garland. And apparently, if you're Team Garland, you hate Sexton. Because that's what everyone keeps thinking, is I hate Colin Sexton. I don't. I really like Colin Sexton. I think he's a wonderful, a delightful person to be around. And, like, you can tell he genuinely loves basketball and, like, he's a hooper. And I don't know how much more hyperbole or, like, praise I can heap upon him to say, like, I like him as a player. But it's okay to have differences in opinions, and it's okay to maybe be critical of things. But like I said, if Colin proves me wrong, I'm more than okay with admitting I was wrong. But like, I just don't, yeah, like I get, like, I don't know what we're doing here. Like, why is everybody getting so up in arms when it's one guy who is barely legal to drink and one who is 180 pounds soaking wet and is still trying to get used to playing at the NBA level. And I'm just, be patient with both of them. Like, I don't know how hard that is to get. Maybe like having Kyrie Irving have such a dramatic leap in his first few seasons as the Cavs lead point guard kind of spoiled us.
Kyrie was a better prospect.
And yeah, that's really that too.
That's just a fact. Like, that Kyrie was a different, like, potential franchise star of prospect. And I think Colin can be like a good player on a good team. I don't think he's, the ceiling of him is that.
No.
the other thing I'll say about this is, like, I think the way, like, sometimes people are talking about Colin is, like, you know, those, like, I love Slam. I grew up reading Slam. BR does this as well. And these are publications that I, like, respect and value. But sometimes they just, like, tweet, like, a video of, like Alex Caruso or, like, Carmelo Anthony, like, making a shot. And they're like, oh, y'all been sleeping on. Like,
sex is different.
He's a diff. Like, we just stop. Like, he's good. No one is acting like he's bad. Having, like, analyzing a player is, like, in a gray area, and, like, sort of, like, evaluating what works is, like, what teams are doing. It's the more interesting way. There's no doubt about it that it's more interesting than just, like, bloviating hot takes about guys. Mm-hmm. And, like, look, I will, like, readily admit, like, there were things about Collins' game that I think I was wrong about. I think the passing's gotten better. I think some of his decision-making has gotten better. I think that he's made even though there's still stuff on defense, we're like, the numbers tell you, like, the numbers indicate that he has made strides on defense into year two. Like,
yes.
Again, what he's done the last 2 weeks has just been absolutely phenomenal. Like, it is not going to get a ton of pub. It's one of the times where I will say, like, I think Colin, I would, like, love to, like, turn on, like, I think, like, the big national NBA show should have, like, I think, like, Zach Lowe should have, like, a second episode a week. And, like, I think it should be him talking to, like, someone in ESPN that also just watches everything, or, like, some other, or I don't care who. And it's just like, okay, we're going to talk about, like, the 20 teams that we barely talk about on these shows. And just, like, it's going to be, like, 7 minutes on all of them. And because, like, I think part of this maybe just comes from people who are like, why is no one talking about Colin Sexton? Why is no one talking about Colin Sexton?
No one cares about the Cavs.
Yeah, and I think that's part of a flaw in, like, sort of how the like, all this basketball stuff. Every team has interesting stuff going on. I believe that. I think the Colin stuff is gonna, again, just, I'm gonna pull up his game log and just kind of run through his last several performances. Okay. Dating back to, I guess there's my, okay. So, if you go back to the end of January, he had 23 points in the 27th, had 24 the next night, had 23 on the 30th, had 23 on February 1st, 29 on the 2nd, or on the 3rd of that month, 23 on the 5th. So he had that string of 20-point games. It goes down to 13 against the Clippers, which the Cavs got shellacked in that game. No shade there. Patrick Beverley just was great. Has 23 and 25 in back-to-back games against Atlanta right before the break, and then in Washington right after. Had two games in the teens, but then against on the 26th of February, 28 against Philly, 31 2 days later against the Pelicans. Had 16 against the Pacers game that we were at, but then had 32 for a new career high on Monday. Surpasses that, passes 40 for the first time tonight. He's getting more efficient. Again, the free throw stuff is real. Like, him getting at least, like, 4 free throws a game is, like, a good sign. And for him to just kind of have, I don't think even the beginning of the year that Colin Sexton would have the patience to play the way he did in this game. I just don't believe it.
Mm-mm, not at all. And I think, I don't know, it's just, I'm having a hard time really putting a pin on, like, and maybe we just shouldn't. Maybe we should stop speculating on his ceiling. And, like, yeah, I've been on a firm stance saying that maybe long term he's a sixth man, but maybe you wait till his third year or fourth year when you have, like, a lot of hard, tangible data to say, like, this is what he's going to be, because I don't know. And I think maybe a lot of it is just a better coaching situation, too, is credit to it. And you and I talked about this, too. JB Bickerstaff is coaching the hell out of these guys, and there's a situation where he pulled Sexton aside, and he was giving him certain assignments and telling him certain things to do, and, like, it was a defensive possession for Cleveland. He said, all right, no score here. Like, that's, I mean, obviously just common coach vernacular, but, like, JB clearly has the pulse of this team. And I think him just knowing the personality so well and able to operate within this, what he has, and just has the respect of this locker room, like, that's something John Bailey never had. And I think that's what's going to be such a huge factor. And it's unfortunate that we're only getting such a small sample of it this season. So it feels like a lost developmental period for a lot of these young players, but maybe JB is going to build a lot of positive momentum. And Sexton is, like, the biggest snowball of all, just because he's been absolutely crazy over this last stretch that you just touched on.
Yeah. He's been really good. He was really good in this game there. This game is nowhere near as competitive as it was without him. And, like, look, one of the things that was just a sign of respect from the other team, and I haven't seen quotes and see if anyone has been talked about this, But Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart were defending Colin Sexton down the stretch. If the Celtics were like, these are fluke points, whatever, we don't care, we're not going to put on Tatum, who's a good defender, and Smart, who is like their lockdown choice, especially with no Jalen Brown in this game. They put those guys on Sexton and were like, defend Colin Sexton. And Sexton, certainly, like the last couple of minutes were a little shaky. That's certainly the worst part of the game, but the guy got them there. Like, again, he beat his career high early. You know, he'll learn from the stuff late, learn from some of the turnovers that he had. But, like, again, I think this is just an overall really positive Colin Sexton performance. Okay, one last break. We'll come back, talk about things that are not going to get us just get people annoyed at us. All right, back here on Lockdown Cavs. So, Evan, let's run through a couple just kind of stuff coming out of this one. Number one, Kevin Porter Jr. only plays 10 minutes, is being evaluated for a possible head injury. You may have seen something I haven't, but I don't think there's been any like true update on that. Took a shot to the head 12 minutes ago. Two things that Spencer tweeted. The one about KPJ, we'll get to that one in a minute. Kevin Porter Jr. took a shot to the head on a scrum for a rebound tonight per Bickerstaff. Cavs rookie is being evaluated. This is just the Cavs being their depth being pushed a little deeper. And again, KPJ missing any time is just a bummer.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And now I'm like starting to think that Cleveland plays next on Saturday against Denver, correct?
Yeah, so they have a back to back this weekend.
So I would think that Cleveland is, let's just say Kevin Porter, he does have a concussion or he doesn't, or there's something that is going to sideline him. I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland erred on the side of caution, but it sucks for sure because Kevin Porter is legitimately one of the more exciting players on Cleveland's roster. But I guess a blessing in disguise is the fact that based on what you and I have heard and just kind of educated guessing that Alphonso McKinney will at least be back, so it kind of counterbalances the loss in depth there, at least on the wing. But, it's just definitely tough, and if Cleveland's health concerns don't get better anytime soon, like, it's just definitely going to make a very thin Cavs rotation even thinner. And hey, Matt Mooney, Dean Wade, and Sir Dominic Poynter, I guess it's your time to shine, guys.
Yeah, if you're thinking about this weekend's games, you want to see who might be available Sunday. So the Chargers also play on Saturday. So they play in in Erie, Pennsylvania against the Erie BayHawks. That is something where you want to keep an eye on, like if they're they're about to go on like a little road trip. So like, you know, kind of keep that in mind there, but then they're off until Tuesday. So theoretically you could have some of them on Sunday. And I think, you know, Mooney, one of the indicators to me that Dean Wade, who we'll talk about next, was going to play in this game was that he didn't play earlier today when they played the Wisconsin Herd in an early afternoon game that they won. But Matt Mooney did, Sir Dominic Poynter did, and those are the guys that you were going to bring up. So when you didn't do that, you were kind of indicating that Wade was going to be the guy that Mooney and they wasn't. So kind of look to see if there's any indication from the Cavs, from the Church, whomever, next couple of days. And then we'll see if McKinney's back. Again, that we're expecting him back. Maybe he plays only one of the games this weekend, but at least that would help, especially if KPJ is out. Speaking of Dean Wade, though, 16 minutes for him, and as you said earlier, astutely, his first real NBA performance. Took one shot, made it, had two rebounds, one assist, one block, and one foul. What did you make of Dean Wade?
It was his first NBA game, period, like in meaningful minutes. I shouldn't say first NBA game, but obviously isn't going to jump out of the box scoring. He's like, oh, Dean Wade's kind of a scrub. Like, there's a reason why he's playing in Cam, blah, 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 but he's really good defensively, and that's what I'm kind of most impressed with, just like how good he looked in those 16 minutes on the defensive side of the ball. And I was pretty impressed with it, and I'm starting to like maybe wonder that maybe these injuries are kind of his opportunity to stake a claim with the Cavs, saying like just to make a case saying that he should be here long term, especially all things considered. If Kevin Love is gone, you're going to need depth at the power forward position, and maybe Dean Wade slots in. and gets like these 16 minutes as his cap next year is like Larry Nance's primary backup if Larry Nance jumps up to the starting power forward spot. But no, I think Dean Wade looked really nice, and I think eventually maybe it's a lot like Kevin Porter where he doesn't try to do too much and slowly just builds momentum and a comfort level with his new teammates. Because I shouldn't say new teammates, because I know he does practice with the Cavs and he is with the team, but he predominantly spends his time with Canton, so that's what I'm kind of getting at. But no, I was just, I'm pretty happy with how he looked overall, and it just, you know, hopefully he keeps it up going forward. And I tweeted this earlier, and I think if Dean Wade is able to succeed and, like, say, like, Matt Mooney does well and Sir Dominic Poynter does well during his 10-day contract, this is something you and I have been advocating for a while now. It's just that Cleveland is actually properly utilizing the developmental system they have in Canton, where they have guys that maybe could be around or long-term options, and maybe they just don't have the time or space to actually get them meaningful minutes at the NBA level, where they just send them down, maybe, I'd say Canton's about an hour from Cleveland, so send them an hour down south to play with the G League affiliate where you're still within the system and the rotations and you're learning everything that Cleveland is already teaching. So, no, if this works out, like, it's just a good thing. It means Cleveland's actually using all of its options to properly develop young talent.
Yeah, one of the things that we saw from coming out of the game is that Bickerstaff basically said, like, they're wearing out Kevin Love a little bit, which is not what you want. So Dean Wade minutes could be incoming. Here's what I'll say about that. I thought he played hard. I thought he, you know, some of the stuff was like a little sloppy, just in terms of closing out, kind of knowing where to be. It committed, you know, just kind of looked a little, was like doing a little too much at times. When you talk to guys, and Jetty talked about this when I talked to him about it, and you know, I've talked to other, we talk to players about this. Sometimes they'll just say like the game speed's just, it is different. There is like a leap, and it's not like a massive, massive leap, but it does take some time to kind of get acclimated. I wonder if he looks a little more settled in game two. And look, I think if you're talking about him as a prospect, I like Dean Wade. Draft people I know like Dean Wade. I think the Cavs and talking to kind of people on both camps there were kind of very happy to get him and how they did. I would certainly view him as someone that could be a rotation guy, or at least be worth trying out as a rotation guy, particularly if Kevin isn't around, or like if Drummond leaves. Like if you need front court depth next year, I think he could be like a serviceable fourth big. I think that would be a good way to go. I've had kind of people suggest to me, mostly people on Twitter, which I need to just stop using, but talking about how, like, you know, like a more competent organization would have like traded Kevin already to clear minutes for a guy like Wade. I don't think that's accurate. I don't think Wade is like a guy you clear heaven and earth to make room for, but I think if you can find him minutes, it's good. And I think particularly like if you want to just manage Kevin correctly the rest of the way, if you want to give him some nights off, if you want to do whatever, I think leaning on Wade is a really good way to kind of do that. That's kind of what I do. And I would just like to see more from him. I think for me, when I look back at the guys they've had on two-way deals, so that's like London Perantes, Jaron Blossom Game, John Holland.
Minutes at one point.
Sorry, what'd you say?
Blossom Game did play some meaningful minutes.
Well, you're right. But my point is that I think in terms of just the prospects of who I think is the best prospect, I think it's Dean Wade. I think if you're looking at the best guy they've ever had on a two-way deal that I feel like has the best potential to be an actual NBA player, I think the answer is Dean Wade. That is not the highest bar in the world to clear based on how we've seen how other guys have gone or where they've gone after they were in Cleveland.
Sorry.
I think Dean Wade's the best prospect.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Sorry, I didn't mean to make that noise. I was just thinking about how it is weird how players suddenly magically get better as they leave Cleveland. Like, look at George Hill in Milwaukee, John Henson and Brandon Knight are now playing well in Detroit. Like, maybe this franchise is cursed. Maybe 2016, like, somebody, it was the absolute peak, and now we're paying the price for our sins by trying to make so many like blood sacrifices or something to make this championship happen.
Do you know what George Hill is shooting from three this year?
No, but I imagine it's like a ridiculous number, like everything else.
It's not on like a high number of attempts, but just guess. I want you to guess. It's on 2.9 attempts per game. What do you think he's shooting from three? This is gonna mess with your head a little bit.
I don't know, like 36%?
48.7%.
Oh wow!
Like good unreal, George Hill, best player in basketball.
That's what we told we were gonna get when he was traded here from Sacramento.
Yeah. I quite like George Hill. Always been a fan.
I did too.
Even though he's like doesn't like talking to us, but a good dude. Any final thoughts?
I hope the Cavs get healthy. I hope everything gets better. I hope this stupid discourse about Colin Sexton just kind of fucks off already, because I'm like, I had my fun. Like, I cracked jokes about it. I'm like, yeah, I'll harass Ben Axelrod and Jordan Zerm and you and other people about it, like, that I know personally. But, like, at the same time, like, life's way too short, man. Don't get so upset over what people think about a basketball player. You're allowed to have a different opinion than everybody else, and everyone else is allowed to have a different opinion than you. Those are my closing thoughts for Wednesday's episode of Locked On Cavaliers. What about you, Chris?
Let's just all be nicer to each other.
Oh my gosh. How dare you?
I just want to be nice.
That's lunacy.
Yeah, and really cool for Colin Sexton to get the game ball. And got a really quick post-game Instagram post from Kevin Love. Kudos to whoever on the Cavs, like, sent him his Instagram photos, like, immediately. It went to Colin's, like, Kevin's like, hey, like, I want a picture of me and Colin for my gram. And, like, they just got it to him. Like, good on that person, whoever's job that was. I'd really just like to shout them out for being the unsung hero in all of this.
Yeah, shout out to the Cavs social media team and, like, media team in general.
Pretty good. On the way out here, you're going to hear Kevin Love saying something very nice about Colin Sexton, how he's one of the court hardest working players he's ever been around. And we're going to end on a positive note. We'll be back tomorrow for Friday, another show. You know, we're kind of figuring out what we're going to talk about still. So maybe if you have questions, lockdowncavs@gmail.com, lockdowncavs on Twitter, tweet them there, send them an email there, or send them to me, whatever. Just whatever you guys want to do, maybe we'll answer some questions tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. But for myself, for Evan, Locked On Cavs for Friday, March 4th. Can't believe it's already March. Talk to you tomorrow.
I don't know. I'm terrible at answering those questions. You know, people said that my ceiling was like a journeyman. So, you know, I don't know. I've honestly never seen. I've been around guys, you know, a couple of years ahead of me, a couple of years behind me, that have worked extremely hard, and he's right up there with the hardest workers I've ever seen. So, I think he's going to be able to. You know, if you say his ceiling is somewhere, he's going to want to break through it. So I don't think I really know at this point. You might have to ask me in a few years. But then again, I might just say, I don't know. I can't answer those questions. I don't know. I